Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for standing by, and welcome to the Centers for American Progress conference call on school funding inequities. All lines have been placed on mute to prevent any background noise, and after the speaker's remarks, there will be a question and answer session. If you would like to ask a question during this time, simply press star then the number one on your telephone keypad. Thank you. I'll now turn the conference over to Ms. Ann Schaup. Please go ahead, ma'am.
Thank you, Crystal. I'm Ann Schaup, Associate Director for Media Strategy at the Center for American Progress, and thank you for joining us today for a press call releasing our new report, Unequal Education, Federal Loophole Enables Lower Spending on Students of Color. You can now find the report at our website at americanprogress.org. If you have any follow-up questions after the press call, you can contact me at 202-481-7146. Just a reminder that this call is being recorded, and by participating in the call, you consent to being recorded. I'm now going to turn the call over to Cynthia Brown, our VP for Education Policy here at the Center for American Progress, who will give us a brief overview of the issue. Cindy?
Thanks, Anne. Good morning, and thank you all for joining the call today to talk about this important issue. My name is Cindy Brown, and I'm the Vice President for Education Policy at CAP. I'm joined on the call today by Representative Jaka Fattah from Pennsylvania's 2nd Congressional District, with Erica Beltran from the National Council of La Raza, and Ari Amaconner, the author of the new report we are here to discuss. In a moment, I'll turn it over to Ari to talk about her report and her findings, but I first want to give some background on the issue of funding inequality. The United States has the most inequitable system for funding its schools of any advanced country. And as Ari's report we are here to talk about shows, students of color bear the brunt of that inequity. Too many high minority schools do not receive the same per pupil allocation of local and state funds as mostly white schools. Too often these schools have large populations of children from low-income families, children who need the most resources to succeed in school. What is the source of this inequality in funding? Across the country, about 40% of public school funding is generated at the local level, mostly by property tax. Wealthier districts are able to raise more local money than less wealthy districts. This leads to unequal spending between districts. But this is not the only source of inequality in school funding. Within most sizable districts, some schools receive more funds than others, and not because one school has greater student needs. This is a problem that has only recently come to light. Why? Because school-level budgeting was never really done, and data was never available on per pupil expenditures at the school level. Districts typically send resources to school by teacher slot allocations and assume an average cost per teacher. But in reality, not all teachers cost the same. In fact, the primary reason for within-district inequitable school funding is the difference in teacher salaries among schools. Teachers are often paid based on experience. This means that two schools can have the same number of teacher positions, but a school with mostly veteran teachers would receive much more money per pupil than one with predominantly novice teachers. A federal policy, a provision of NCLB Title I, not only allows but actually requires districts to use district-wide average teacher salaries when calculating individual school expenditures. Instead of using the amount actually spent on teacher salaries at each school, this provision is the so-called comparability loophole. This federal policy has allowed districts to cover up, or at least has failed to expose, these within-district differences in school spending. Our top priority must be ensuring students of color and all students receive their fair share of resources, and reforming Title I so as to end the practice of using average salaries in budgeting is a basic first step. Now let me introduce Ari Amaconner, the author of CAP's new report, Unequal Education, Federal Loophole Enables Lower Spending on Students of Color. Ari recently received her law and public policy degrees from the University of California at Berkeley. Prior to law and public policy, Ari worked on education issues on the Hill and at the Urban Institute's Education Policy Center. Ari?
Thank you, Cindy. And thanks to CAP for supporting this paper. I do think the findings are important for students and families across the country. And I want to say a big thank you to Congressman Fattah and to NCLR for being such leaders for students of color and students living in poverty across the country. So, the paper. Most people are shocked when I tell them that before this year, we've never had a national data set that tells us how much money schools are actually spending each year. So at a basic level, it's actually very exciting that the Department of Education has finally collected this information and is sharing it with us. The paper itself gets a little technical, I will admit, but the top line findings are actually very straightforward and I think quite compelling. I sort of like to think of this in two separate big chunks. The first is to say that the paper really documents that there is a major problem in our schools across the country, and that problem is a pattern of underinvestment in students of color. Federal law, as Cindy mentioned, is allowing and, in fact, encouraging districts to shortchange students of color across the country and the schools that serve these students. I've been asked to be very brief, and so I want to give just a few top-line numbers describing this problem and what I found in the paper, and you can see a lot more detail in the report. My favorite way to talk about this problem is to compare schools that I consider the mostly white schools. Those are schools where 90% or more of students are white, with schools that are mostly non-white, where 90% or more of students are students of color. And this is not an extreme version of the story. In fact, a third of our students go to schools like this. Our schools are very segregated today. And when you compare those two groups of schools, the paper finds that today, after you adjust for geographic cost of living differences, we spend $733 less per student in the minority schools than we do in the heavily white schools. That's $733 less per student per year, and that adds up to a lot of money. That adds up to, in an average-sized minority school of about 600 kids, that adds up to 12 new teacher salaries or 9 veteran teacher salaries. And that's a lot of new teachers for 600 kids. That could dramatically change class sizes, not to mention all the other kinds of resources that could be purchased with that money each year. In an environment where students of color are graduating high school at far lower rates than their white peers, it just doesn't make any common sense to be spending so many fewer dollars on these schools serving high concentrations of students of color. And then the second thing that my paper does is explore a pretty obvious, though not complete, solution to this problem. And one of the reasons the problem exists, Cindy alluded to in the opening, and is sort of well known, this whole issue of school districts in richer neighborhoods having more property tax money to spend than districts in poorer neighborhoods. And we know that that exists. I think it's a huge civil rights issue. It's something I've been involved in legal ways in the past, and we absolutely need to continue to work on fixing this problem. But this paper actually turns to a second source, less well-known funding discrepancy, and that is within district variation. And one of the big findings of this paper is that, according to this new data set, approximately 40% of the variation in spending nationwide comes from within district variation. That's a big chunk of variation that hasn't been talked about very much, although some leading researchers, particularly affiliated with CAP, have started to point that out in the past. Page 15 of the report gives a state-by-state breakdown of the percentages, but on average nationwide, we find 40% of variation is from within district spending differences. So we can address this within district proportion of the problem by closing the comparability loophole that Cindy also alluded to in the opening of this call. And so what my paper does is it models what this would look like. It models what each school would be getting if they were getting their fair share of resources under a closed comparability requirement, a comparability requirement, a federal requirement without the loophole that exists today. And if we do that, my paper shows, we could reduce the spending disparity, like, for instance, the $733 less per student in minority schools that I mentioned above, we could reduce that problem by about one-third. It's not going to solve the problem. It's not a silver bullet. We have to do all the other things that we know we need to do. But it's a big step in the right direction. And for people who are working on federal policy, we know that any change in education policy that can come from D.C. is incremental, and to get to a third is a pretty big first step. So I think it's a great policy solution, and I'm so glad that I can be here and talk about it and advocate it.
Thank you, Ari. Now let me introduce Congressman Fattah. Congressman Fattah has represented Pennsylvania's 2nd Congressional District since 1995. He is a leader on school funding equality and has co-authored the Fiscal Fairness Act, a bill which, as I'm sure he'll tell you, would reform Title I to close the comparability loophole. Congressman Fattah?
Well, thank you, and let me thank everyone who's joined the call today. Let me first start with why this is important. The McKinsey & Company, in a study commissioned by Mayor Bloomberg, showed that even though we talk about the recession that the country is recovering from as the worst ever, that we actually have each year a loss in GDP greater than at the heights of this recession that began in the end of the last administration, that is with us every single year because of the disproportionate success and failure rates of kids in schools, and all the way back to the Nixon School Finance Commission decades ago, is that this is the result of disparities in investments. And I think this study points out again how real this is. An additional 12 teachers in a school of 600 young people would mean a great deal in terms of educational attainment. So this study is critically important in terms of, again, adding to the whole body of empirical data that shows that young people of color and poor kids in general are being shortchanged through the way that we fund schools. The bill that I've introduced, the Fiscal Fairness Act, closes this comparability loophole. In the study and the work that was done also suggests that, you know, it could be phased in over time. But what's critically important is that we address the issue. That is to say that we always have some outliers who say, well, you know, money doesn't matter. Well, if it doesn't matter, then we should equalize it. But the one thing we should not be doing is having the kids who need the most help being provided the least resources. And this study, again, points out how this actually adds up in very damaging ways in terms of the opportunities for these young people. But moreover, the economic circumstances of our country dictate that if we're going to compete against much larger populated countries like China and India, we have to get all of our young people an education that allows them to pursue college and careers. And this study shows that one of the things we have to do is close this loophole that allows for the underfunding and the underinvestment in the poorest communities in the country.
Thank you, Congressman. Next, I'll introduce Erica Beltran. Erica is a senior policy analyst with the Education and Children's Policy Project at the National Council of La Raza. At NCLR, Erica works on pre-K-12 issues related to Latinos and English language learners. Erica?
Thank you, Cindy. And thank you so much to Congressman Fattah for your hard work and dedication to these issues. We're very fortunate to have you as a strong champion for education equity in the halls of Congress. Thank you for your work. And especially thank you to ARI and to CAP for releasing this report that provides clear evidence about what many have suspected, that the comparability loophole directly contributes to unequal spending in schools, and that, in fact, children of color are literally being shortchanged. Given the growing number of Latino students in classrooms across the country, this is an issue of great importance for NCLR and for the Hispanic community. Today, there are 12.1 million Hispanic children enrolled in U.S. public schools, comprising almost a quarter of the entire student population. About one-third of Latino students are English language learners who need additional supports to master both subject matter content and the English language. And though Latino student enrollment in public schools has increased, their achievement is still lagging behind. According to 2011 NAEP data, only 19% of Latino students are proficient or above in eighth grade reading, and only 21% are proficient or above in math. Moreover, Hispanic students have a graduation rate of only 63%, so it's very clear that schools are already struggling to meet the needs of Hispanic students. And yet, according to this report, these students are missing out on potential resources that could improve their learning and academic growth. Resources that could provide additional supports like ESL experts in a school, more professional development and training for teachers, or more effective parent engagement programs. In fact, the report highlights significant disparities in Texas and California, two states that are responsible for producing half of the nation's Latino dropouts. These findings should be a call to action for governors, for state legislators and for school board members. Policymakers and community stakeholders must support efforts to close the comparability loophole, including Congressman Fatale's Fiscal Fairness Act. We must see to it that resources make their way to students of color, including Latino students, who are in clear need of more support to reach their full potential. We simply can no longer afford to continue to underinvest in students of color if we have any intention of closing the achievement gap and moving toward the ideal of providing equal opportunities for all of our nation's children.
Thank you, Erica. We will now open the call up to questions.
And as a reminder, if you would like to ask a question, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad. Again, if you have a question, please press star, then the number 1. We'll pause for a moment to compile the Q&A roster. Your first question comes from the line of Arlene Edmonds with the Philadelphia Tribune.
I had a question. I know in Philadelphia this has been happening, but they've always had what they call an equity coordinator. And I was wondering, did you find in your study anything relating to having these equity coordinators? Were they there to make sure that that school was equitable, or how did that work? Have you found anything like that?
Hi, Arlene. Thank you for the question. This is Ari. I did not find anything like that. I didn't do a ton of digging into the specific personnel that districts had around the country to address this issue. One thing that I did discover in reading other people's work is that district officials often don't realize that this problem exists because they think that they are providing equitable funding because they're providing, as Cindy mentioned in the opening of the call, they're providing the same number of teachers and the same student-teacher ratio to all of their schools. And so they think they're providing equitable services and just have for so many years been trained to think about that as the measure for equity, when in fact what they need to be looking at is the total dollars that they're spending in each school. And so a lot of school personnel have never had this data, and so it's almost not their fault that they don't realize that this is a problem. So I can't speak specifically to equity coordinators, but I can say that many district personnel, I think, aren't really aware that this problem exists because they haven't had the data until now.
Your next question comes from the line of Michael Zinstein with Education Writers Association.
Hi there. Thanks for setting this up. My question is for Congressman Fatah. I'm wondering if it seems mostly uncontroversial to equalize funding. So what is the roadblock your bill is facing to address the comparability loophole?
Well, I think that we have the support of all of the civil rights, major religious and educational groups, including all of the teachers unions and others. I think the major hurdle is that we haven't reauthorized the Elementary and Secondary School Act. I think if we move forward with reauthorization, we will be able to pass this. But as a general matter, this question has always been pushed to the side, saying, well, money's not the only thing that's the problem, or money's not the critical issue. And my position is that we need to deal with this both in terms of the lack of comparability in districts and the lack of comparability between districts, so that we can fully provide at a minimum the resources we're providing in other schools to those where low-income students attend. There's been a lot of resistance to the notion that further investment is going to change the outcomes, when, in fact, I think all of the empirical evidence is to the contrary. That is, to the degree that we provide more comparable resources, we get closer to raising the comparability level in terms of the success rate and the educational attainment rate for children.
But Congressman, you just said additional resources. Wouldn't your bill just equalize funding rather than require additional revenue?
this bill is to provide additional resources in schools where poor children are, right?
Okay.
In terms of what we would be saying is that the district has to be providing a comparable level, and what that would mean in this case is is addressing the shortfall in those schools which you have a predominant portion of low-income students. So it would require additional resources or the fairest sharing of resources in the district.
Thank you.
Again, if you would like to ask a question, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad. Again, that's star 1. At this time, there are no questions in queue.
Okay, well, thank you very much, everyone, for joining this call. If questions arise with you during the day, please don't hesitate to get in touch with us here at AmericanProgress.org. Thank you very much.
This concludes today's conference call. You may now disconnect.